This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Wednesday, March 20th, 2013, the last day of winter. A measure to require more inspectors for oil and gas wells across the state is scheduled for a public hearing at the Capitol on Thursday. It was the first drilling-related bill introduced this session, and the sponsor hopes it will begin to address public concerns about hydraulic fracturing. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Democratic Senator Matt Jones is from Longmont, which has become one of the epicenters of the fracking debate. The state is suing the city for passing strict local regulations, and last November, voters passed a fracking ban. Jones says his bill will add needed protections.
It increases the number of inspections to one per year, and it also requires a risk-based approach when you inspect a well, so you prioritize the worst problems.
There are roughly 50,000 active oil and gas wells in the state, and Jones says each gets inspected on average once every 3 years.
This is not just people's health. It is that, but it's also the quality of life we've worked so hard to build and what attracts high-tech, biotech, clean-tech type jobs that pay so well.
The Colorado Oil and Gas Association says it's still reviewing the measure, but already has several concerns. The association supports the idea of additional staff, but says 70 new inspectors will be expensive. It also says companies have an incentive to self-report because of strict environmental liability laws. Republican Greg Brophy from Ray sits on the committee that will hear the bill. He says it's unnecessary because the state hired about 7 inspectors last year, and the budget for this year also requests additional staff.
They feel like they have the right mix of timing on these inspections. They get the new wells done. They monitor problem wells. They pay attention to what citizens are telling them about. I'm not sure what the purpose is.
Democrats have introduced 3 other oil and gas bills this week, including one that would increase fines for oil and gas operators who harm public health, safety, or the environment. Another would require sellers to notify a prospective buyer if someone else owns the property's mineral rights. Brophy says he thinks all these proposals could test Governor John Hickenlooper.
And we're finding over and over again that this governor is significantly to the left of where he has been portrayed. Is he going to side with the folks that favor New York City values or the folks that favor Colorado values?
And despite new rules on the issue, Democrats have also pledged to introduce a host of fracking bills dealing with local control and setback distances. For his part, Governor Hickenlooper has faced a backlash from environmental groups for being what they say is too pro-industry. His office says he's not yet taken a position on these measures. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that an explosion caused by a natural gas leak rocked a Grand Junction neighborhood Tuesday afternoon, sparking a raging fire that claimed 2 homes and sent 3 people to the hospital with burn injuries. A massive evacuation of hundreds of people in homes, businesses, and schools in an area bordered by Grand Junction High School on the west, Tope Elementary School on the north, Colorado Mesa University on the east, and North Avenue on the south was partially lifted Tuesday evening. Residents of roughly 75 homes were escorted back into their homes to retrieve necessary items before being forced to make other arrangements Tuesday night. Police Chief John Camper said residents in an evacuated areas overnight are asked to meet around 8 a.m. this morning at Seventh-day Adventist Church at 730 Mesa Avenue, where representatives of Xcel Energy will escort them back into their homes, checking for gas and, if need be, relight pilot lights. Officials said 3 people were taken to St. Mary's Hospital with burn injuries. 2 were admitted for observation overnight, while the 3rd was treated and released. And the Sentinel is also reporting that an investigation continues into the cause of a hydrocarbon leak near Parachute that is now more than 5,800 gallons in size. Todd Hartman, spokesman for the State Department of Natural Resources, said Tuesday another 420 gallons of an unidentified liquid apparently associated with natural gas development were pulled from a pipeline right-of-way near Parachute Creek, about 4 miles northwest of town, this since Monday morning. About 86,000 gallons of contaminated groundwater have been removed, up from about 60,000 as of Monday morning. There's been no indication of impact to the creek, said Hartman. Williams, which along with WPX Energy owns pipelines in the right-of-way, is investigating several lines as potential sources. A bill to repeal the death penalty in Colorado got its first committee hearing at the Capitol on Tuesday. The issue is especially personal for some lawmakers and is sure to be contentious as it moves through the State House. After a long debate, the committee delayed a vote on the measure, and as Bentha Berkland reports, the hearing was filled with heart-wrenching stories.
Lawmakers on the Judiciary Committee heard hours of testimony as victims of murdered loved ones told their stories. Robert Audubon's son was a correctional officer who was killed in Lyman a decade ago. Audubon fought for years to get the death penalty for his son's murderer, but says the process became a nightmare and took a huge emotional toll.
Last year, I lost my faith completely. That's what this has done to me. Capital punishment is not right. Two wrongs do not make a right.
The bill's sponsor, Democratic Representative Claire Levy of Boulder, says the death penalty is a failed policy that raises a whole host of concerns.
The arbitrariness of the death penalty in Colorado, the amount of power that is vested in one person, one elected official, the cost to the system.
Death penalty opponents say having it on the books doesn't deter crime, costs millions of dollars for appeals, and fails to bring closure to families. Randy Steidel was wrongfully sentenced to death in Illinois in the 1980s. He was eventually exonerated after spending more than a decade on death row. He says death started to look good, and life in prison would have been a worse sentence.
It was early release. That had they rolled that gurney by my cell on many occasions, I'd have strapped myself on it.
Colorado has executed one person since the death penalty was reinstated in the late 1970s, and currently three people sit on death row, including Nathan Dunlap, who is out of appeals. He's set to be executed soon, unless he gets clemency from the governor. The bill to repeal the death penalty wouldn't be retroactive and would only apply to crimes committed after July 1, 2013. But Republican Representative Bob Gardner of Colorado Springs says it's naive to think it wouldn't impact Dunlap's case.
We would kid ourselves to say that if this bill were to pass, that it will not be used or will not in some way have an influence upon those who are already convicted and awaiting the execution of their death sentence.
There's also the ongoing case against James Holmes for last summer's Aurora Theater shooting. Arapahoe County District Attorney George Brockler will announce whether his office will seek the death penalty on April 1st. He testified against the bill.
We are in the business of justice, and I'm here to tell you unequivocally, without hesitation or qualification, that the repeal of the death penalty creates an injustice in Colorado.
Brockler also defended the long appeal process, saying it's a good thing because it makes sure an innocent person isn't executed. And he says seeking the death penalty isn't something prosecutors take lightly.
You will do something that no other law in the state of Colorado has, and that is no extra penalty for a repeat offender, no extra penalty for the number of victims you have, and no extra penalty for the heinousness with which you will commit the crime.
And to add another twist to the debate, the two other men on death row are there for the murder of the son of State Representative Rhonda Fields, a Democrat from Aurora. Fields supports the death penalty and has introduced a separate bill to send the question of a repeal to voters. Her daughter, Myesha Fields Pollard, gave lawmakers a passionate plea to keep the death penalty.
Each life is sacred. Whether it was the life that was taken in the movie theater in Aurora, whether it was lives that were taken in Chuck E. Cheese, each life deserves an opportunity to receive a punishment that is worthy.
Pollard also criticized Democrats for rushing the measure. The bill was introduced late Friday night, and the hearing was announced on Monday.
To introduce a bill such as this less than 36 hours ago is insensitive.
The last time Democrats tried to eliminate the death penalty 4 years ago, they came up one vote short. Democratic Representative Ed Veal of Alamosa was the key swing vote in the House and kept the bill alive in that chamber. He was torn because as a one-time district attorney investigator, he once used the death penalty as a tool to solve a homicide, but he also thinks it's too expensive to prosecute.
You do learn that you can change your opinions. It's definitely going to be a challenging debate.
Privately, some Democrats worry the party is trying to accomplish too much this session. The legislature has already had bitter fights about gun control and passed controversial bills to allow civil unions and in-state tuition for undocumented students. Up next is the budget debate and a slew of anti-fracking bills. Governor John Hickenlooper hasn't said whether he would sign a measure to repeal the death penalty. He's previously said it's an issue he's struggling with. I'm Benta Berkland.
According to the Telluride Daily Planet, the U.S. Department of Energy has released a draft environmental impact statement in favor of continuing its uranium leasing program. The agency plans a series of April public hearings on the issue across the Western Slope. The federal program, which leases land to mining companies, was revived in 2008 in the Uravan Mineral Belt, with 31 leases awarded or renewed for mining-related activities over 25,000 acres between Naderita and Moab, Utah. Legal challenges followed, with conservation groups challenging the DOE's leasing policy. The program was halted until a more thorough environmental analysis was undertaken, and in March 2012, a federal judge issued a new ruling allowing the DOE to proceed with a detailed environmental review. That review is now complete and available for review at the agency's website, which I will post on our website along with the news headlines today. It's ulpis.anl.gov. You can find that after the news on kvnf.org. The Department of Energy evaluated five alternatives ranging from canceling the program to a no-action plan of continuing the program for the remainder of the 10-year period. Out of the five possible alternatives, the Department of Energy has thrown its support behind option number four, which would continue the uranium leasing program with the 31 tracts for the next 10-year period or another reasonable period with reclamation. San Miguel County had supported alternative number one, which would terminate all the leases and the mining companies would reclaim the operations. The Department of Energy would continue to manage the lands without uranium leasing. 12 of the 31 tracts are sprinkled throughout San Miguel County's west end. 17 are in Montrose County and 2 are in Mesa County. The parcels are leased by Energy Fuels, Cotter Corporation, Colorado Plateau Partners, and Golden Eagle Uranium. The Department of Energy will accept comments on the draft review during a 60-day public comment period, which began March 15th. Public hearings will take place April 22nd at Colorado Mesa University, April 23rd at the Johnson Elementary School in Montrose, April 24th at Telluride Middle or High School, and on April 25th at the school in Naderita. All of the meetings are from 6:30 until 9 p.m. And finally, it's not often you get an office named after you, but a local veteran had that experience at a meeting of Delta County Commissioners this week. KVNF's Marty Durlin has the story.
On Monday, Delta County Commissioners honored Gordon O'Brien by giving the Veterans Service Office his name. O'Brien ran the office in the basement of the Delta County Courthouse for 24 years before handing the job off to Brian Ayers a decade ago. At a reception for O'Brien, Ayers talked about how O'Brien had inspired him.
Gordon's just an outstanding man. He's a great person to kind of emulate and kind of how to live a life, you know.
O'Brien himself was modest when I asked him why he had dedicated so much of his life to helping veterans.
It was an easy relationship because every one of them earned every bit of whatever recognition they got.
O'Brien's family and friends, along with other veterans, attended the reception. And long after the commissioners had presented the award and gone back to their business in the next room, the party continued. Saluting Gordon O'Brien, I'm Marty Durlin for KVNF News.
Thus concludes today's newscast. This is Brian Cambria for KVNF News. Good day.